A conspiracy is most often dismissed as theory by a fringe element looking to make trouble or gain attention for themselves. However, there are some events that have taken place during our recent history where the accepted contains more questions than the so-called conspiracy theories. My guest with his book takes a serious analytical and thought-provoking look at death, some you're aware of, others you should be, that I think will compel you to demand the truth and answers that anyone in a free society should always have access to. His book is Dead Wrong, Straight Facts on the Country's Most Controversial Cover-Ups. He's one of the stars of the NBC series Law & Order SVU, and, by the way, a fellow Jerry Lewis worshiper, Richard Belzer. Good morning, Richard.
How are you?
Good to speak with you. And let me give you Richard's website, ibells.com, and you wonder why the URL is that. When you go to the website, you'll figure that out real fast.
Also, belzerbook.com about my book. It's a really good website with a lot of footage in it.
Your book is fantastic, and you know, especially since
thank you.
I don't want to mention other. I typically don't do this, but there's another book on the Kennedy assassination that's just come out, and it starts off with the almost like what you mentioned, Dead Wrong. What Vincent Bugliosi did, he starts off with the conclusion and works backwards, which I think is, and it's Bill O'Reilly's book. I'll just say that, and he does the same.
Yeah,
he does the same thing that Bugliosi did. But talk about how you structured, you put the focus on, like I said, some of the deaths that people know, like Monroe, the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, and
Fred Hampton and Vince Foster.
Foster.
Earl Monroe, right.
And you also spotlight a few of the other ones that we'll get to as we go through here. But
right.
How you wanted to examine and pardon the bad pun here, dissect each death.
Well, I was a newspaper reporter many years ago. My partner, David Wayne, is a microanalyst of the media and how they cover these events. And we both have been kind of studying this material for a long time. He's obviously done more legwork than I have, but we didn't want this to be put in the, you know, like as a conspiracy book. It's a history book. It's in the history section. And I've done a lot of interviews, and no one has yet refuted anything in the book because we're using testimony from FBI agents, we have forensic evidence, we have scientific evidence, and we just have so much information and footnotes and bibliography that we're reporting the truth and let the chips fall where they may.
Let's start with the one that people will probably most recognize. We'll do one of the ones I think you introduced that will educate people: the John F. Kennedy assassination. What is the biggest fault in assuming Oswald was a lone gun shooter, and what's the biggest element that makes that the biggest fault?
Well, he didn't fire a shot. He was having lunch on the first floor, then he went to the second floor. There are witnesses who saw him in the lunchroom, three different witnesses. He named two of them, which would have been virtually impossible for him to guess who would have been in there at the time. This is 5-6 minutes before the assassination. The physical reality of him shooting three shots, going across the big floor of the depository and wedging the gun behind boxes and going down four flights, which is actually eight flights. It's four flights, but with landings. And then opening a big, heavy door and going over to a Coke machine, putting a coin in and getting a Coke. You know, that would have taken a long time, but because there was a police officer and the manager of the building saw him drinking the Coke. And when they reenacted it, they had the FBI agent who played Oswald not really do everything Oswald did, and they made the officer slow down in his reenactments to make it so that Oswald, if he was on the sixth floor, could have made it to the second floor, as the Warren Commission says, in 90 to 95 seconds. But it's physically impossible. He would have had to have been down there in a minute. In 60 seconds. That means firing three shots, realigning each one. And the way they describe it, he goes straight across the sixth floor, but the sixth floor had stacks of books on it. It was a depository, so he would have had to, navigate all that and then wedge the gun behind boxes. The FBI agent just laid the gun on the ground. So, I mean, these seconds count. And the police officer who ran up the stairs was kind of slowed down at the behest of the investigator. So, I mean, just that alone. Plus, Kennedy was hit with two different kinds of bullets. One of the bullets that hit his head exploded. One that hit him in the throat and the back were different types of ammunition. I mean, there's so much there. It's just endless.
And it also seems like, for everyone to buy into the Warren Commission ways of
no
how
no one does anymore. I don't think.
I mean, there were still the diehards, but for you to believe the Warren Commission, you have to think that every law of physics had to be suspended or polluted that one day for everything to happen the way that the Warren Commission said it happened. I mean, I always thought, right. And my big curiosity was the limo slowed down and the people.
It stopped.
People think that, well, is that part of the conspiracy? And I'm thinking, well, human nature, if I hear gunfire in front of me.
No, but you're a trained agent. I read the manual. If you're in the Secret Service and you're a driver of a car that the president's in and you hear a gunshot, if it's three blocks away, you immediately floor it and get out of there, even if your tires are shot out. That guy stopped the car, turned around, looked, saw Kennedy's head explode, and then drove away. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, that's human nature. If I hear gunfire
it's
in front of me.
It's not human nature if you're a trained guy, trained to protect the president. You are trained, if you hear a gunshot, to get out of there. Human nature.
But what if
human nature. It's training.
But what if the gunfire
is there?
But what if the gunfire, like you write, is coming from in front of you? Are you going
it's
to
coming
drive
from all different sides?
Exactly. Are you going to drive into the gunfire?
You know, you're driving away from the kill zone.
Okay.
Even if it's triangulation of fire, which it was, you don't sit there in an open car with the chief of state in the back exposed. Get out.
Talking about Richard Belzer. His book.
I don't mean to yell, but
no. That's no. I mean, I was trying to make the point as the observer what people think about as far as that element is concerned with You just, you know, that was the layperson saying you just don't drive in a gunfire. I wanted to bring the point out
the gunfire is coming from all sides.
Exactly.
So you had to get out of there somehow.
You don't stay there. Yeah, which was for multiple reasons, by the way. A, to do the kill, and B, to confuse the witnesses so they didn't know where to look for the gunfire. Although most of the witnesses, as you write and as you point out, did go and point up and even one of the cops went up to the grassy knoll.
None of those people were called before the Warren Commission, by the way.
No, that's
true.
Those
people that ran up the knoll, none of them were questioned.
You know what else is frustrating, too, is if Abraham Zapruder, through some miracle, I mean, he didn't duck and dodge. I mean, he filmed as long as he did. I think the estimate was if he panned another 5 seconds, he would have had a clean view and image of behind the grassy knoll.
Well, his secretary standing behind him saw someone there.
Yeah.
His film was immediately confiscated and doctored. Frames were repeated. Frames were taken out. It's been animation added, rotoscoping. I mean, the Zapruder film we see now has nothing to do with reality. There was a man called Orville Nix who was on the other side of the street who filmed the car going by. And if you place the two films side by side on the split screen, the timing doesn't match because the Zapruder film has been doctored. Because they didn't want to show the car stopping, for one thing. Everyone said it stopped. All eyewitnesses said the car pulled over and stopped. Some people say it slowed to a near stop. Some people saw brake lights. But, you know, they should have gotten the hell out of there.
No argument on that part. We're talking with Richard Belzer, along with David Wayne, their book Dead Wrong, Straight Facts on the Country's Most Controversial Cover-Ups. iBelz.com, BelzerBook.com. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Now, I want to touch on one of the more lesser known ones. And well, to put it mildly, if you were a friend of Lyndon Baines Johnson and you didn't do everything right that you were supposed to do, or you took part in stuff that you were supposed to do, your life expectancy had a drastic change, didn't it?
Well, it's very interesting. In Texas, Johnson had, you know, like every state has their own court intrigue and it doesn't always make national news. But Lyndon Johnson was known in Texas, as a really ruthless politician. He had a guy who worked for him called Mack Wallace, who was called Johnson's hitman. And Billy Saul Estes testified that Johnson had Mack Wallace kill a couple of people who were about to uncover the scandal involving Billy Saul Estes, a good friend of Johnson's, who was getting millions of dollars from the Agriculture Department for wheat and grain that he allegedly had but didn't. He had empty silos. And the two whistleblowers were, one was shot 5 times with a bolt-action rifle and was called suicide. The other was struck on the head and was died by carbon monoxide poisoning in his own truck. That was called a suicide. But and there are 3 other cases that David Wayne has uncovered that clearly looks like Mack Wallace had his hands involved in it. And Mack Wallace's fingerprints were found in the school book depository on the boxes that were supposedly the sniper's nest. And Lee Harvey Oswald's fingerprints were not found in any boxes. So there's a lot of fishy stuff going on there.
Yeah, that's also why I think people, they always wonder why. Well, if there was a conspiracy and there were these elements that were known, I mean, you had members of the mob that were just flat saying, yeah, we did it, and why can't it all be put together? When you look at, as you do with Dead Wrong in so many cases, there's just so many chefs in the kitchen doing the soup that to get everything to piece together, at least up until what you guys did with Dead Wrong, obviously the powers that be in the government don't want the truth to come out. We know that for a fact.
But yeah, they release a lot of information. Some of it's real, some of it's not real. Then authors run off and write all these books, and then you find something in the book that isn't true, and the whole book gets refuted. That's why David and I were so careful to just put in, you know, factual material and not be subject to being marginalized or called conspiracy theorists. I mean, conspiracy means two people, you know, got together and decided to commit a crime. That's what it means. So
yeah.
There's conspiracies every day for all of history, is, you know, and yet they try to marginalize the word and demonize it, but it's not working anymore. The American public is much more savvy than they've ever been and ready for real information.
And unlike a blog post on the web, what Richard and Dave really have done, total analytical, factual look with expert observations, firsthand witnesses, and strangely enough, when you think of conspiracies, you don't really think of when you're trying to dissect them, but logic. And that's really what brings you to the answers that equal the truth, and that's what Richard and David have done with Dead Wrong, Straight Facts on the Country's Most Controversial Cover-Ups. And real fast, I know that you're in the process. I did a little wandering around the web. You are in the process. I mentioned Jerry Lewis before. Are you planning or are you indeed writing a book on Jerry?
I am writing a book on. It's almost done. It should be out in the spring. It's just a view of his great life and career from the point of view of a good friend. And we've got some great archival material that Jerry has. And it's an exciting story that's building to Nutty Professor being a Broadway musical, which is about to happen. So it's a whole arc of his career, but from his point of view and also interviewing people like Steven Spielberg and Jerry Seinfeld and Eddie Murphy, and who have, you know, been totally influenced by Jerry, and just putting it back in perspective for his fans and maybe a lot of people that don't know a lot about his amazing career. He's been around since 1946.
Yeah. So definitely look forward to that, and certainly look forward to the truth. And as we get with Dead Wrong, Straight Facts on the Country's Most Controversial Cover-Ups, co-written by David Wayne and Richard Belzer, iBelz.com, BelzerBook.com. Richard, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thanks, buddy.